Good morning, everybody. Our week's and happy Hanukkah to all of us. Our week's parsha is Parashat Miketz, and it's on page 199. I'm sorry. It's later, but I'm starting today from last week's portion in order to build an idea that goes through our week's portion, but starts last week's portion. So I want you to open at 199, which is last week's portion, Parashat Vayeshev, and we'll soon come also to Parashat Miketz. The parashiyot that we are learning now are about Yosef and the brothers. As we know, there are four parashiyot in the Torah that discuss this topic: Vayeshev, Miketz, Vaigash, and Vayechi. So we learned Vayeshev last week. This week we'll go to Miketz, but in order to get to what we want to discuss in Miketz, I want to start with the beginning of Vayeshev. So let's see what happens there. So as we know, Yaakov loves Yosef, right? If you look at verse number 3, now Israel loved Yosef more than all of his sons, since he was a child of his old age, and he made him a fine woolen tunic. As a result, as we know, the brothers were jealous of Yosef, right? And they hated him. But the hatred was a result of things that Yosef said. Obviously, we speak about very, very great people. And when we speak about hatred or jealousy, we speak about things that are done consciously, meaning it's not that they are overcome with hatred or with jealousy. They behave as if they hate him, and it's a decision that they made consciously to the best of their knowledge, because that's what has to be done. Okay, so one of the things that Yosef did and initiated the fact that the brothers felt that they have to remove him from the family is the dreams that he had, famous dreams that he had. And I want to see it inside if you go to 201. Okay. Yosef had two dreams, as we know. Verse number 5. Okay. Yosef dreamt a dream which he told to his brothers. And they hated him even more. Okay. And what did he say to them? Hear, if you please, this dream which I dreamt. Behold, we were binding sheaves in the middle of the field, when behold, my sheaf arose and remained standing, and behold, your sheaves gathered around and bowed down to my sheaf. So he had a dream that the sheaves of the brothers bowed down to him, obviously indicating that they will bow down to him. He knew already that the brothers hate him, right? That they are jealous of him. What was the point of telling them, right? And they tell him in verse number 8, his brothers say to him, would you then reign over us? Would you then dominate us? And they hated him even more, right? Because of what he said. So it was obvious that this will be the outcome, no? If you hate somebody and he comes and tells you, I'm going to roll over you and you are going to bow down to me, obviously it will increase the hatred. Not only doesn't it prevent Yosef from saying it, but he has another dream, right, about the sun and the moon and 11, the stars and the moon and the sun bowing down to him, right? Indicating his mother, his father, and the brothers. And obviously, there will be even more hatred. Okay? Then in verse 11, it's written that the brothers were jealous of him. Right? So, what was your the point? What was the question? There were two approaches in terms of looking at these dreams and interpreting them. We know that dreams can be one of two things. Either they are an indication of thoughts that a person had during the day, or that they are a small prophecy, a prophecy. Yosef knew and felt, and Yaakov as well, that this is a prophecy, meaning it's Hashem telling him what's going to happen, while the brother thought it's a reflection of his thoughts during the veil. If it's a prophecy, Yosef felt that he has to tell it to the brothers. Because if a prophet gets a prophecy that has to do with other people, and it's a mission, right? He has to say, he has to tell them if they like it or not. I'll give an example, Yirmiyahu, right? Prophesied constantly about the destruction of the temple. It was not easy for the Jewish people to hear it. They hated him. They even put him in prison because of it. They did not believe that it's the truth. But he didn't stop saying what he had to say. He got prophecy, he has to say it. So that's the question here. Is Joseph really going to be the ruler? Is he the designated ruler in the house of Jacob? Or is he just a person who wants to be a ruler, right? And forces his leadership on his brothers. And the question is connected to the dreams. Now, the brothers, we explained it in the past. I'll say it very briefly because it's not our topic. It's last week's Parshem. We discussed it in the past. The brothers felt that Yosef is not worthy of being the leader of the Jewish people. It's now the time of putting the foundation to the Jewish people. If Yosef becomes their leader now, it means that he and his family become the leaders of the Jewish people all along history. And they did not feel that a person who wants to be a ruler, and they interpret it as arrogance, is worthy of being the ruler. And if he's not a proper one, it's a terrible thing for the Jewish people, and he has to be out of the way. So they are going to take care of it. So as we know, Yaakov sends him to the brothers to see how they are. And I want to go to the next page to see what happens there regarding the dreams. That's the thing that I want to examine in last week's portion. If you look at verse number 20, page 203. Okay, so now the brothers say they see him from afar approaching them, coming to them. So they say, so now come and let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits, and we will say, a wild beast devoured him, then we shall see what will become of his dreams. So you see, the dreams are coming back to the surface. They feel that they need to kill Yosef for the sake of the Jewish people. It has nothing to do with personal hatred or jealousy, right? And they want to kill him, put him in a pit. Now, then they say, and then we'll see what will happen with the dreams. But this is not clear. If they are going to kill him, what's the question? Let's see what will be the dreams. It's not a question anymore. The dreams are over. He's dead. Right? So Rashi says something very interesting. Rashi says this sentence, let us see what will be with his dreams, was said by the Shechina. Hashem said it. They said, let us kill him. And Hashem says, and let's see what will be with the dreams. Very interesting. Like, how Hashem sees what's happening. Okay, so to them, the story is over. They are going to kill him. As we know, later on, they decided, no, it's not a good idea to kill him. Instead of killing him, let's put him in a pit. And let's see what will be. Okay, but let us not be those who kill him practically. We put him in a pit, as we know. In the pit were scorpions and snakes, right? And let's see what will be. What's this? Let's see. If they put him among scorpions and snake, how could he survive? There is a very big difference between them killing him and putting him in the pit. It seems to us that there is no difference. It's only two different ways of death, either by them or by the scorpions and the snakes. What's the difference? Why did they reconsider and decided to do this? So what is explained, and it's very, very beautiful, that they were very great, honest people, right? And even though they felt that and knew consciously that it's the right thing from their perspective to kill him, they were still afraid that maybe their decision is subjective. So they said the following: human beings can cause sometimes damage to somebody else, even if he doesn't deserve it, because they have free choice. So they make a choice. The choice has consequences. Sometimes they might be able to succeed causing harm to somebody, even if he doesn't deserve it. How is it fair is a topic on its own. Sometimes Hashem will interfere and won't let it happen. But for this, a person has to be perfectly righteous because it's not the regular cause and effect things. But if the person is not totally perfect, it might be that Hashem will say, okay, there are things that for it, right? I will let it happen. But if he's put in a pit and there are scorpions and snakes there, he's totally in the hands of Hashem. And what they said is, let Hashem decide. What's with the dreams? Are they a prophecy? Or are the dreams a reflection of your thoughts during the day? Obviously, it was prophecy, because as we know, he didn't die, right? Okay, so up till now, we all know, we discussed it in the past, but I want to take it from here and see what is really happening here beneath the surface. So here is a group of very, very, very righteous people who come to the conclusion that for the sake of the Jewish people, Yosef has to be out of the picture. His dreams should not be talked about by him. He should not try to act according to the dreams, try to be the ruler, right? Rebuke them, speak against them to the father, right? And so on and so on. So they first want to kill him, then they put him in the pit. What happened? As a result, he ended up in Mitzrayim. And in our week's portion, and now I'm moving to our week's portion, page 245. No, I'm sorry, not yet. Page 225. 225. Or even before the beginning of the parashat 223, as we know, Yosef was in Mitzrayim. He ended up in prison. And he interpreted the dreams of two ministers of Pharaoh, right? And as a result, after Pharaoh had the dreams, he was called upon Pharaoh to interpret his dreams. And all of us know the end. Yosef became the ruler of Egypt. As a result, in our week's portion, we find the brothers bowing down to him, right? So our week's portion is a proof that the dreams were true prophecy. But let's think for a moment. Who brought it about? How did Yosef end up in Mitzrayim? And how did the brothers end up in Mitzrayim bowing down to him? They themselves. Right? All they wanted to do is to make sure that the dreams won't come about. And that's why they decided to take steps that it won't happen. They wanted to kill him, but left it to the hand of Hashem. But still, the purpose was to remove him from the house of Yaakov and to make sure that he will not become a ruler, he will not become a leader in the Jewish people. And it was them who made it happen by trying to prevent it. Isn't it amazing? Right? What does it show to us? Obviously, that there is an involvement here of Hashem. As we said before, when they decided to kill him, Who said, let's see what will be Viviv dreams? Hashem said. Meaning you have a plan and you do everything in order that your plan will come about, will be materialized. And you yourself cause the plan to fail and you cause the results to be exactly what you didn't want to happen and tried to suffer. An amazing thing. In other words, we were given free choice and we can make decisions. The brothers made a decision to kill Yosef, or at least to make sure to remove him from the household, to ensure that he won't have an influence in the house of Yaakov. This was in their hands, to make the decision. But how it will develop and what will happen, totally not in their control. To the extent that what they said, what they did in order to remove him, brought it really into reality and made it happen. It's an unbelievable thing, right? So the story of Yosef teaches us that reality has two layers to it, two levels, what we see and what we don't. And that's why we never know how it will develop, unless we have prophecy, right? What Yosef did, right? He also didn't know the details how it will come about, but at least he knew what's going to happen. But the brothers had no clue how what they do will lead the story and how it will end up. Okay? Fascinating idea. Now, it's not only the only place in this story that something like this happens. In the beginning of our expulsion, page 223, okay, the Torah starts our expulsion with the words, it happened at the end of 2 years, to the day, Paro, it's page 223, Paro was dreaming that behold, I skipped the dream, right? And as a result, Yosef ends up coming in front of you, right? Now, let's see how it starts. And it happened after 2 years. 2 years of whom, of what? Of additional years that Yosef got in prison after he interpreted the dreams of the two ministers of power. Yosef was for 10 years in prison before the dreams of the two ministers. Then he interpreted the two dreams. One of them, he said, will come back to his old position to be a minister in the household of Yosef, of Pharaoh, and the other one will be killed. And that's exactly what happened. 2 years after this minister was released and came back to his old position, something happened. But the order of things in the Torah indicates something very interesting. And the Midrash interprets it. The Midrash says, Vayimiketz shnatayim yamim, and it was after 2 years, exactly 2 years, to the day, right, that the word miketz, at the end of, the Pasuk doesn't say the end of what, so the Midrash says the end of darkness. Hashem put an end to the darkness. Up till now, everything that happened to Yosef did not have any explanation, not from Yosef's perspective and not from the tribe's perspective, not from Yaakov's perspective. It was all hidden. Things were in the making. But in terms of what human beings could see, the brothers succeeded. Yosef is away. He's not challenging anymore the position of leadership, and the Jewish nation is saved. Everything's fine, but we are in the dark. These 2 years passed, and now we start to see what was going on in those 12 years. It was a preparation for what's coming now. What's coming now? Soon Yosef will be in front of Pharaoh, right, via the ministers they interpreted his dreams 2 years ago, right, and he'll become the king. Now let's take the story from the perspective of the minister who forgot about Yosef for 2 years. That's the last version in the last pasuk, the last verse in last week's portion in 2:21. Last week portion ends with "Velo zachar sar hamashkim et Yosef vayishkachehu." The minister of Pharaoh did not remember Yosef; he forgot him. Not there, not at the moment after he was released, right? And for the full 2 years, didn't remember it all. And all of a sudden, Paro has a dream. And Paro asks for interpretations. The dream bothers him for different reasons that I'm not getting into now. But he understands that there is more to it than just a dream that means nothing, right? It is only a reflection of thoughts during the day. Right? So he wants interpretations. And his ministers suggest different ones. You'll have seven daughters, and the seven daughters will die. You will conquer seven countries, and then you lose them. Whatever interpretations. And Pharaoh is not happy. And this minister realizes that Pharaoh is in a desperate need for somebody who will interpret the dreams in a way that will satisfy him. Now, over these 2 years, if you would think, try to imagine, what was the relationship of this minister to Paro? How did he think about him? What was his attitude towards him? Obviously, he was very happy that he came back to his position, but he did sit in prison for quite a while. And because of what? He prepared the drink for Paro in the proper way. On the way from the kitchen to Paro, a fly fell into the glass. Is it in his control? This is out of control. What did Paro do to him? Threw him into prison. Right? Obviously, he was angry at Paro. Right? He felt bad for him. But here comes a moment all of a sudden where this minister understands something very interesting that he didn't see till now. That he was in prison, not because of the fly that went into the glass that he served Pharaoh, but that there is something behind it. It's not about Pharaoh and his drink. It's because the dreams of Pharaoh that need an interpreter. That he can now provide, being that he was in prison. He changed his outlook totally about what took place. And even a minister of Pharaoh in a place where the belief in Hashem is not part of reality had to see the divine hand in what's going on. This explanation is given by the Meshech Chochmah, that's the name of a commentary to the Torah written by Reb Meir Simcha HaKohen of Dvinsk. He was the rabbi of the city of Dvinsk. He was born in the middle of the 19th century and passed away in 1929. And his book is a classic. And it's amazing. It was written when he was 17. Unbelievable book, commentary, right? And that's what he explains. He explains that even a person that grew up without seeing the divine hand at all, right, all of a sudden sees it very, very clearly and realizes that we don't run the show, that he has no control. He didn't have control about the fly going into the cup. He didn't have control when Pharaoh threw him into prison. In monarchies like this, the king can do whatever he wants and nobody can challenge him, right? But all of a sudden, he understands it's not Pharaoh, it's not the fly, it's Hashem running the show. So we have here two examples, right, of people who have no control, of Hashem pulling the strings behind, right? It indicates itself later on too. As we know, there was a famine in the land of Israel, in the land of Canaan, as it was called at the time, right? And the brothers end up in Egypt trying to get food. That's the only place that there is food because Yosef preferred food from the 7 good years for the 7 difficult years, the 7 years of famine. So the brothers come down to Mitzrayim. And a whole saga we have in our week's portion, a whole saga of interactions between Yosef and the brothers. When we read it, we ask, how is it that the brothers did not see that this is Yosef? They knew he was sold to Egypt, right? And there were so many signs that this person is Yosef. A, he had a dream that he will be a king. And here he is the king, and they come in front of him and bow down to him. But more than this, what was the dream about? About wheat, right? Shift of wheat. And everybody is around his one, meaning he's the one to provide. So clear. Then, why does he call him to him? How does he know information about the father? Why does he ask for Binyamin? Rashi says when he set them down to eat with them, yeah, he put them in the order of their birth. So obviously he knew who is the oldest, who is the youngest, and so on, and many other things. Right? You know, there is a famous tale about a lady in Mea Shearim. If it's true or not, doesn't matter, but it indicates a point, right? That the first time, you know, when she had young children, she didn't go to shul on Shabbos, right? She couldn't. At that time, there was no education for Jewish women, right? So she didn't know the stories in the Torah. She came the first time when this farshiyot were read, and she heard the story of Joseph and the brothers, and she had so much mercy on him. She was crying and crying and crying the whole parsha. A year passed, and she's again in shul. And hears the story again, and she says, "This time I'm not going to cry. He heard it all last year. Why did he go? Right? What's happening here? Right? Obviously, it's a story that I don't know if it did happen, but what it indicates is it was so clear, right? Why didn't the brothers see it? So it's another indication that it's possible when Hashem doesn't want that we will see, that we won't see. We won't see. So it seems like a reality without control. Okay, it's good to know that Hashem runs the show, and obviously he knows to do it better than all of us, right? We believe, even if we don't see or don't understand, that whatever he does is the best for us, right? But it seems to minimize our share or our doings in this world. We can do something in order to get one result, and what happens is exactly the opposite. How is it possible? Right? What does it say about us and about what's going on? So, I want to show how unlikely what happened was when the minister of Pharaoh introduces Yosef to Pharaoh. Let's see what he tells him. It's on page 225. Pharaoh heard a few interpretations. He's not happy with it. And then, what does he say? Verse number, it starts, yeah, 11. We dreamt a dream. That's what the minister tells Pharaoh, tells him the history. We dreamt a dream, he and the other minister, on the same night. I and he, the other minister. Each of us, according to the interpretation of his dream, did we dream. Right, so the sages tell us that each one of them dreamt his dream with the interpretation of the others, right? And that's what he's saying here. And there, Vivas, was the Hebrew youth, slave of the chamberlain of the butchers. We related to it to him, and he interpreted it. I want to go to the Hebrew. How did he describe Yosef to Pharaoh? So he says in verse number 11, Na'ar, a youth, Ivri, a Hebrew, Eved, a slave. There is a very interesting Rashi here. He could have said there was somebody there, right, to interpret the dream for us. What does he mean by saying Na'ar, Ivri, Eved, a young person from the Hebrews, right, the family of Abraham, who was the first Hebrew, and a slave, says Rashi, Arurim Areshaim, cursed should be the wicked people. A very difficult language, harsh language. Arurim Areshaim, he curses the wicked. Rashi, he says, She'ein Tovato Shlema. Because even when they do a favor, finally, he is mentioning Yosef to Paro. As Yosef requested from him as gratitude for the interpretation, right? So he's doing what Yosef asked him, but he puts in negativity. What does he say? Na'ar is young, but means he is not developed fully, ensuring that Pharaoh will not have too much gratitude to him and make him important, give him a high position. That's what Rashi says. Then, Ivri is from the Hebrews, he doesn't even know our language. Okay? And the third one, Eved, a slave. And Rashi says, and in the laws of Mitzrayim, it's written that a slave can never be a king and can never be a minister. Unbelievable. He seems to do something good, right? Fulfilling the request of Yosef. And he owes it to him, right? He saved him heartbreak. And he obviously is a person that has some knowledge that regular people don't have. It came true. So there must be godliness in this person. And as we said before, he already realized by the fact that he is the one who can give the information to Paro that somebody else is running the show here. But he cannot do it full-heartedly. Na'ar Ivri Eved. And interestingly enough, even though he says it, Yosef becomes the king, the second to the king. He doesn't affect anybody. Right? Paro appoints Yosef to be the one to rule over all of Egypt. He gives him his ring, he gives him full authority, besides being called the king himself. Right? So again, we see that something not natural is happening here. Something that should not be anticipated. And that's one way to explain how Hashem, so to speak, maneuvered the reality. So the brothers won't think that Yosef is Yosef till the time will be ripe for it. Because it's against the law in Egypt. It's unlikely in Egypt. To the extent, I want to show you a little further. In 245, Yosef is already ruling over all of Egypt. All the authority is given to him. His brothers come because he called them, right? And they sit and eat together. How are the tables set? So let's look at verse number 32. Let's start in 31. Okay? So it's after Yosef cries already. He knows already these are his brothers, but they don't know him yet, right? So then he lifted up his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin. Okay? His mother's son. So he said, Is this your little brother of whom you spoke to me? And he said, God be gracious to you, my son. Then Yosef rushed because his compassion for his brother had been stirred and he wanted to weep. Okay, so he went up, he weep, and then he comes back and he says, serve food. So he's offering a meal. And then the Torah tells us something very interesting. They served him separately and them separately, and the Egyptians who ate with him separately. So three tables for the brothers, for Yosef, for the Egyptians that were with him. So Yosef and the brothers, we understand, he is the ruler who was they, right? But why the Egyptians in a different table? So the Torah says, for the Egyptians could not bear to eat food with the Hebrews. Okay? It's being loathsome to the Egyptians. So he's already the ruler, right? And he's still the Hebrew, right? They are still separating him from themselves. They can't eat together. It's against the law to that extent. So obviously it was very remote that Yosef will become a ruler in Egypt. We know the society of Egypt was divided into groups, into different levels of rights and social status. And man could not change it. It was by birth. There was a group that was slaves, and a person cannot get out of it. So Yosef is a slave. So he acts as a ruler, but at the same time, he is a slave, remains a slave. So their brothers did not even think that this could be Yosef, regardless of all the signs that were there. And that's how Hashem maneuvers things. So they won't know till the right moment. Okay? So we see the control of Hashem all along in all the examples that we give. When we see it, as I said before, on one hand, it's fascinating to see how Hashem runs the show without us seeing it, but it puts a big question mark of what is in our hands. Why are we here? What can or can't we do? What's our role? Okay. So I want to look at this a little bit. Okay. One of the famous questions that are asked about Yosef and the dreams of Pharaoh is the suggestions that Yosef gave Pharaoh after he told him the interpretation. He told him there will be seven good years, then seven bad years, and Pharaoh should appoint somebody to collect food in the seven good years, so the people will have in the seven bad years. Who asked Yosef for suggestions? He just is a slave who came out of prison, right? And he is giving advice. Pharaoh can become very angry at him. And interestingly enough, Pharaoh is not angry. He appoints him as king. That thing, a youth, 17 years old, a Hebrew, and a slave. What made Pharaoh appoint Yosef and say, there is nobody as smart as you are? I won't find somebody who is capable of doing it like you. Go ahead, be in charge. For this, we have to understand the Egyptians' way of thought vis-a-vis our way of thinking, Yosef's way of thinking. The Egyptians knew that there is a God. When Pharaoh said later on, the beginning of Shemot, the Torah tells us, who is Hashem? Not because he didn't know Hashem. And there are proofs for it. That's why he put the Hebrew children, the firstborn, the boys, not just born, all boys, into the Nile, because he said Hashem already swore that he won't bring a flood again. And Hashem pays back measure for measure. So if we do something bad with water, he won't be able to punish us because he swore that he won't do it. So obviously he knew Hashem. And he knew the history, and he knew that he brought the flood, right? So what did he say? The Torah continues. Who is Hashem that I will listen to him? This was the point. Why do I have to subjugate myself to his will? What was Pharaoh's understanding of reality? Pharaoh understood that Hashem created the world, but gave it to us, and now it's up to us to run the show. This is the meaning that Pharaoh made himself into a god. I am the king of the strongest country in the world, the world's power, so I am the show. Then he hears about a dream and he understands that this is a message for him as a king. That if a king has a dream, it's not a private matter, it's a national matter. And he believed that there will be seven very good years and then seven very bad years. If we look at reality from his perspective, does Egypt have hope? No, 7 bad years, 7 years of famine. No country at those times can survive. No freezers, no deep freezing. 7 years, right? Meaning is detrimental. And he didn't feel that he can do anything. Just the gods, so to speak, give him information because he is the king, right? Tells him, enjoy the 7 good years because see what will come after. It's like eat and drink because tomorrow you're not alive anymore. Right? And his ministers had the same point of view, the same attitude to life. You'll have 7 daughters and they'll die. What can you do about it? Nothing. You'll conquer 7 countries and you lose them. What does it mean? You have no control. Comes Yosef and says, wait a moment. We have free choice. If you were told the dream, it's a call for action. This was a revelation. And how did Yosef achieve it? By the fact that when he came in front of Pharaoh and Pharaoh told him, I heard that you know how to interpret dreams, like another magician, like all the others that he had. But I know that you know how to do it. What does Yosef say? Oh, not me. God. To say this in Egypt was very courageous, especially for a slave that his fate is in the hands of Pharaoh at the moment. And he can say, what nonsense, right? And send him back or kill him. He can do whatever he wants. But interestingly enough, it was an eye-opener for Pharaoh. We have control. To an extent. What is the extent? So in terms of Pharaoh, we explain what's the extent. Gather in the 7 years, so you'll have in the other 7. Now for this, you need yourself. Everybody understands that if you have now and you won't have after, you should take what you have and make sure to have later, save some and use it later. But when it's a whole nation, it can cause a chaos. You saved more, I saved less, you have, I don't have, jealousy, wars, whatnot. Yosef was ready to take control and do it in a way that will be justified, that will be fair to each and everyone. And this impressed Pharaoh. So he took him. But Yosef teaches us something very interesting. A lot is not in our control. But we have control. On what? After the facts happen, according to what Hashem wants, how do we react? And how do we behave? How do we react? The brothers took Yosef, who was innocent, separated him from his father, separated him from them. He loved them, he admired them, and rightfully so. And what is he going through in Egypt? And he knows it's Hashem, and he's happy. There's control. That's great control. One of the most difficult things to do, to go through something like this, to know that there is a God who runs the show and did not prevent it, and believe that this is what has to happen and is for the best. That's one. But there is more. All along those years, till the brothers came to Egypt, and later on, after the brothers came to Egypt, Joseph had choices, not about what will happen, but how will he behave at that time that it does happen, that it is happening. Okay? For example, he ended up as a slave by Potiphar. It was totally unjust. There was no reason for him to be a slave. He didn't do anything wrong. But Hashem put him here. So he served Potiphar diligently. He did his job as if he would have been paid for it. Because Hashem put him there. The job was offered to him. It means this is what he has to do now. He doesn't know why. Only Hashem knows. But a person who is given a job has to be loyal, and he does it. Obviously, he has indications that he's doing the right thing because Hashem makes him very successful. And Potiphar gains a lot from what Joseph does, right? And that's why he gets a position in the house of Potiphar of running the show. So, interestingly enough, he cannot get out of slavery. He remains a slave, but in fact, he's the master of the house. He's not a slave. Right? So the behavior is in his hands. The way to take it and how to behave while it's happening, that's in the hands of the human being. Obviously, the test of Potiphar's wife, right? Obviously, here he had a choice to succumb to her or to leave. And leaving meant what he ended up with, being in prison and naturally for life, right? If not of Hashem's interference, that's how he would end his life, right? But he's doing the right thing, no question. And when he's in prison, again, that's where Hashem put me. Over this, I don't have control. I don't understand why. So, A, I'm not saved. We see that Joseph asked the two ministers, why are you saved? Now, somebody who is saved doesn't ask others, why are you saved? Like, if he's in prison and this causes him to be saved, why does he ask the others, why are you saved? Right? It's an indication that he was fine, in a good mood. Why? Because Hashem put him there. And again, he got a job there and he did it in the proper way. And that's why the ministers had trust in him and told him about the dreams. Right? So, we have control in the behavior. And many times, when we behave properly, it changes also what happens. We can control events in within a certain framework, right? Based on our behavior. Because many times Hashem puts us there in order that we will come to this way of behavior. And when we do, there is no reason for it to continue in this way. Okay, let's go further. And that's an explanation given by Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev. And it's fascinating. Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev was one of the great Hasidic rabbis, I think in the second generation of Hasidus. The Magid of Mezritch was his Rebbe, Baal Shem Tov, the Magid of Mezritch, and then the generation, the third generation, was one of them was Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev. And he's famous and known as the defender of the Jewish people, always trying to find positive aspects of the behavior of the Jewish people and defend them in front of Hashem. So he asks a question that all commentaries ask. The Ramban says it and others as well. Yosef is in Egypt. How far is Egypt from Israel? Very nearby. Right, they have a common border. Very nearby. It's a matter of a few hours walking. Why didn't Yosef send a messenger to his father to tell him that he's alive. Obviously, his father is devastated that he didn't come back. He's empty. So he might feel guilty. And also, he lost the beloved child, the one of two only that he has from Rachel, the one that he taught the Torah of Shem and Ezer to, the one that was on the highest level of all the Shvatim, even though every one of them was a giant. The pain is unbelievable. Why did he send a messenger to his father to tell him what's going on? So the famous explanation is that being that Yaakov was a prophet, Yosef figured if Hashem would like Yaakov to know that he is alive, he'll tell him. If Hashem doesn't say it, obviously Hashem doesn't want it to be known. This was also Yitzchak's calculation. Yitzchak knew that Yaakov is alive in prophecy. He didn't share it with Yaakov because the same way that Hashem told him, Hashem could say to Yaakov. And the fact that he didn't indicates Hashem doesn't want it. And he explained last time that certain things had to happen in preparation for the Jewish people, for all generations, and that's why Hashem did not want it to happen. The Rav Levi Yitzchak of Gvardeitshov, in his book Kedushat Levi, on the Torah, right, gives another fascinating explanation. He says as follows. When the brothers came to Yaakov, to Yosef, even later on, right? Many years after, 20 years of separation, right? They came to Egypt for food and he recognized them. And he knew these are his brothers. Why didn't he reveal himself to them? Why did he cause him so much trouble till he revealed himself? Asking to bring Binyamin, taking Shimon into prison to ensure that they'll come back with Binyamin. After Binyamin came already, putting his cup in Binyamin's sack and blaming him for being a thief, and so on and so on and so on. Blaming them that they are spies. Why? It cannot be revenge. A, because we know who Yosef is, and second, later on, he tells them, don't feel bad. Hashem sent me here. There was a reason why he sent me here. It's not you. Hashem did it. So obviously, he's not taking revenge. So what's the point in it? So Reb Levi Yitzchak of Gvardeitshov says something fascinating. He says as follows. Imagine that when Yosef recognized his brothers, he would tell them, I am Yosef. And Yosef is the second to the king. Everybody has to bow down to him. And they will have to bow down to him too. What will it mean for them when they bow down to him? The dreams are coming through. And then it will hit them. We thought that the dreams are a reflection of what happened during the day. And he was right all along. It will be a moment of terrible embarrassment. Terrible embarrassment. Right? He didn't want them to be embarrassed before they bow down to him. He wanted to prevent the moment of them, while bowing down to him, realizing this is Yosef. So when they came to him, they didn't know it's their brother. It's the second to the king. You come in, you bow down. So when they bow down, they knew nothing. And they were not embarrassed. Only then Yosef told them, I am Yosef. So he minimized their embarrassment. Unbelievable. The same, he says, is the reason why he didn't tell Yaakov. Because if he would have told Yaakov that he is Yosef, the brothers will know too. Yaakov's mood will change fully. He will start mourning. Everybody will know. But the bowing down did not take place yet. So they will have to go through later on this moment of embarrassment. So Yosef said to himself, the Pharaoh, I'm not in control of what's happening. Why did it happen that my brothers blamed me? Why did I end in Egypt? Now Yosef understands. He's the ruler. He knows the dream will come through. He understands the brothers will come to Mitzrayim and this will be the beginning of the exile. The moment he is the king and there is famine, after years of good, and he has the means to provide, Yosef understands already what's going on. But the brothers don't. Right? So what is in his hands? To bring it to this point was totally out of his hands. Hashem did it. And we explained that it was so unlikely. Eved Ivri Naar, right? A youth who doesn't speak the language, right? Who is a Hebrew, right? A slave, right? But Hashem did it. But what is his in? What is in his hands? How to act at the moment? He cannot control the reality. Hashem wanted this separation. It's necessary for Klal Israel. Hashem wanted the pain. The pain is accomplishing things. Hashem wants Yaakov pain. It accomplishes something. Because Yaakov, overcoming the pain and dealing it with the right way, paves the path for us, for all exiles. Yosef sees it already. Over this, he doesn't have control. And the pain is pain for him too. But he can choose how to behave under these circumstances. He did the utmost that he could to make the right moral choices. This is the way to get to redemption. Because that's all Hashem demands from us. Hashem didn't give us the ability to run the show. He runs the show. What he gave us as a mission for life is how to deal with the realities that he puts in front of us. And in this way, based on our behavior, he adjusts his control on this world. After Yosef behaved in the proper way, the tribes behaved in the right way. They learned different things in the process, right, and realized that it was a mistake to sell Yosef. What they could not see before, almost. It was almost impossible for them to see because Hashem wanted it to be this way, right? Now that everybody did what he had to do and the path is already paved for the Jewish people, now there is no reason for the pain to continue. The same will be for us. This story of Yosef is always read on Hanukkah, right? Sometimes a week before, but in the area of Hanukkah. There are four parshiot. Some of them are always read on Hanukkah, right? Why? Because it's the same idea. It was a time of darkness. The Greeks came to the land of Israel. The challenges that they presented to us were beyond our control, right? The environment, we couldn't enforce our way of life on them, but it affected many of us. We could not change. Matityahu and his children cannot even change the way of thinking of many Jewish people who followed the Greeks. But there was an area where they can make a decision. And this was to go out to war. Even though there are a few against the many, with total self-sacrifice, because that's the only option under these circumstances. And they were on the level that they were able to do so. Being that they did their share, this brought the victory in the war. And the same later on. It was already after the fact of the Greeks contaminating all the oils. There was no oil. It's an effect now. This they cannot change. But they could have self-sacrificed in order to get pure oil as soon as they can. And it was total self-sacrifice because it was still a very unsafe time. And not only did they prepare new oil from olives, but we are told that they went to the north, to the area of the land of Israel that is in the, that was given to Asher, And the Torah tells us that in the area of Asher, there is a lot of good oil. Me'asher shamna lachmo. There is shemen, good oil, in the territory of Asher. But it was all the way in the north. And in those days, in a time of a bomb, to go from Yerushalayim till there was big self-sacrifice. But the oil for the menorah was always taken from the north. Before the Greeks, you know, conquered, right, and took over the Beit HaMikdash, stopped the service in the Beit HaMikdash. The moment they have an ability to do it right, they self-sacrifice themselves. They couldn't purify the oil that was contaminated. Contaminated, that's it. Cannot be used. Interestingly enough, it could be used. Because when there is no olive oil that is pure, you can use the contaminated. But they said, we have a choice. We can wait. Okay? So they put the oil for the first night. But when they became on such a level, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made sure that a miracle will happen and the darkness will be ended. So the Ketz Sam Lachoshech, Hashem ended the darkness, is a general rule all through our history. So at times it's dark and we don't see the way out. And we don't even know why exactly in this way, at that time. This week was a very difficult week for us, very, very difficult for us. So dark, right? It's after the fact, at the moment, right? But how do we react to it? How much self-sacrifice for doing the will of Hashem in a better way do we invest as a result of it? That's in our hands. And the more we do it, the more we bring close the end of the darkness. Okay, I'll finish here and I'll open to remarks and questions.
Before we open, the class is dedicated Le'ilu Nishmas Me'ira Chaya Nechama Bracha Bas David Mordechai. Ladies, you should be able to unmute yourselves.
Okay, I was wondering if Yosef looked exactly like Yaakov. Wouldn't people
again?
We learned that Yosef looked exactly like Yaakov.
Right.
In the mirror, he saw his father's face. So the brothers didn't even see a part of that. They would just
say
they have blinded him for them.
They knew that he's very great, but they saw arrogance. Now, arrogance is the hardest test. And it's a test of very great people. Because the greater you are, the more reason you have to appreciate who you are. Right? But it was way beyond it. It was a whole way of thinking what's right in terms of the leadership of the Jewish nation. Yosef was the highest, but it was not a way for everybody. Yehuda, the king from the other tribes, right, that was chosen as a king, right, held that we have to include everybody. We have to have a way that is more in the open and can include everybody. So it was not a simple discussion. Are you the king? Am I the king? What's the best way for the Jewish people? And the truth is that both are true. Mashiach, the son of Yosef, will come first, and then it will go to Mashiach, the son of David, right? The Mashiach of Yosef prepares the ground for the Mashiach of Yehuda, but the ultimate Mashiach will be from Yehuda. So each one had a point. You understand?
Are you talking about in the beginning when they sold him? I'm talking about when they came to Mitzrayim and they didn't recognize him.
No, this they know. This was the argument to start with. When they saw that Yosef wants to be the king, they said, that's not good. It has to be Yehuda, we include everybody. And Yosef said that if you include everybody, you cannot reach the height. That if you go in my way, you will reach. Right? So it was all on levels that are way beyond us. You know, there is a famous saying that Hasidim used to say in Europe, right? That the parshiyot of Bereshit are wrapped up in a fur coat, meaning you don't see the inside. We have to learn from them, and that's what we try to do. But what really took place there You have to be on their level to understand. All right, so there are different interpretations, things that we have to learn, but the ultimate story, we don't know.
Thank you, and prayers for
Sure.
Hanukkah.
Anybody else?
To Dina, I just want to say that if she's asking a question of why he wasn't recognized, it has to do with that he looked just like an Egyptian. Remember, he also used to comb his hair and he got dressed after he came out of prison. So he looked just like them.
Yeah, but still, they go out with him for 17 years, and there are so many signs that he knows the history of the family and understands and whatever that they could have known.
Well, they saw it was God, like when he placed them on the table and he put them in order of age, so they
Of
knew
course,
somebody
you
was gone, but they didn't know it was him.
see, you can always rationalize, but there were too many signs. People came from all over the world for food in Egypt. They just have to do it to anybody. What's going on here? Why are they blamed the spies? Why are they invited to him? Right? And so on and so on. There were too many question marks.
Yeah, but
Right? Why was the money returned time and again?
God was behind it, but they didn't get that that's Yosef up there because it didn't look like him at all.
The point is not the looks. A, I think that after living with a brother for 17 years, you recognize the voice, you recognize movements, you
That's why they
recognize the way he walks.
She said
But it's,
they didn't expect him. And remember, he left when he was 17, so there was a
yes, of
little.
course, that's the shot. That's the shot. But there is much more to it. Because why did he return the money one time, then a second time? Why did he put a goblet by Benjamin? It looks like he wants to create an animosity. Why? He doesn't know them. What's the point, right?
They're being set up, but they don't know it's him setting it up. That was her question, why they recognize him.
I just meant on a physical level. Why did they recognize him if he looked exactly like his father?
He showed them that he's circumcised, it's written.
Then
Many things.
I thought they did
Yeah.
that after he revealed himself.
What did you say?
Didn't he show he was circumcised after he revealed himself, like in Vayigash?
I think before he says, sure, maybe. Yeah, you're right. But I think the whole process, right, was very strange. What's his point? What's his interest? They had to find the reason why he does it. Before, don't find that they contemplate even. Why does he do it? They saw in it the hand of Hashem. They said, "Aval Hashem imanachnu." Hashem saw, right, that we did something wrong. But still, why he is the messenger? With a little bit readiness to accept him as the one that they have to bow down to, they would have seen it. But they were so sure of their judgment, and that's why they didn't see. Okay? Of course, it was concealed, right? But there was a possibility to see. There are 10, one of them had at least to figure out, right, what's going on here, right? Your
Binyamin wasn't
suspicion.
even involved.
Excuse me?
Binyamin wasn't even involved.
Right, exactly. There were many abilities, but Hashem didn't want them to see. And he didn't want them to see. So it was concealed. Okay. I'll go because we didn't light candles yet. Right, and by us, it's
You're
already
in
half
Eretz
an hour and a half
Yisrael.
table. So I'll take the right to leave a little earlier. And if there are more questions, we'll answer next time.
Happy
Okay?
Hanukkah, Mrs.
Okay, have a
Mohr.
happy
Thank you.
Hanukkah. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Thank
everything. Happy
you.
Shabbat.
Sure.
Sure.